You're on The Daily with Jared Cross. I hope you're enjoying your public holiday out there. It's getting to that time of day. You're probably going to have a little think about what's on the menu for lunch. Quick trip to Woolies or Coles might even be on the agenda. But as you walk in through the automatic doors and you're hit by the aircon of most supermarkets and greeted by a sprawling display of trays and stands of fresh produce, it's hard not to take it all for granted and invest some thought into where it's all come from and the work involved. The past year and all it's brought so far has made it acutely aware for many of us how precious natural growing regions and resources are, how some commodities are more sought after than we might have previously realised and or thought, and possibly even more aware of our spending practices after feeling a little lighter in the hip pocket. Now imagine you're able just to stroll past a building and pick off a fresh mandarin or such to tuck into while you walk with no need to pay. Is there a case for urban agriculture making a shift into public spaces full of fresh produce to take advantage of around breakfast, lunch, dinner time, or if you just need a snack? This idea was addressed in a recent release via the UNSW newsroom, and joining the show to discuss is registered landscape architect and senior lecturer at UNSW, Joshua Zoynert. Did I pronounce your surname there right, Josh?
Yeah, great, Jared. Thank you very much for having me.
No, thanks for your time. In the release, you refer to an urban disconnect you believe many of us have about kind of food production. What exactly do you mean by this, and how does it inform the case for edible public spaces?
Yeah, I guess you articulated it well. When we walk into a supermarket, there's this phenomenon called permanent global summertime. It's the notion that we can walk in and get any piece of fruit or any vegetable that we want at any time of year, completely oblivious to the seasonality that things grow and the natural rhythms in which, you know, things are grown. And it's also the disconnect of where children don't know that, you know, most vegetables are grown in the ground or can't identify that milk comes from cows or things like that.
So is there the hope that maybe if we move into, like that's also kind of outlined in the little piece there, that there's spaces that might have a little bit of fresh fruit or this, that, the other. I would hazard to guess we probably won't be able to have cows there to be able to milk, fresh for milk, but it might set in stone or at least set a precedent in kids, in kind of even adolescents, and I guess even adults about sustainability and how these kind of natural resources work and going forward, so that maybe you can't have an orange in summer. Maybe you can't have the growing time for grape, but that kind of alike things of have actually understanding our food, where it comes from, how it grows and how precious they are.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, growing food isn't an easy thing to do. And so, you know, I think we need to really respect what our, you know, the amazing thing our things our farmers do. And so, I mean, this isn't a way of, I guess, competing with those. It's a way of just appreciating, you know, more of us appreciating what we need to do to bring food about, let alone bring it about in that sort of consistent supply chain model, you know, that gives us the amazing food and the abundance that we have all the time. And so there's also a lot of health benefits of getting involved in growing our own food. And exactly like you pointed out, you know, there's a right place and a right context for these things to go. But, you know, there were a lot of suburban dairies in Sydney right up into the sort of 1950s and 1960s, and you know, that's not that long ago. Supermarkets only appeared in our society from about the 1950s onwards, and so it's been a relatively recent shift in the way that we brought food about, and we now have a very sort of transport-based model where, you know, we talk about food miles and the incredible distances that our food or, you know, our sort of supposedly fresh food, you know, when something's cold stored for a long period, you know, is it still fresh? So when we can grow, you know, fresh food in public spaces in the right context, whether it be in, you know, an urban orchard or a community garden, those sorts of spaces, making them a bit more prominent, or a suburban sort of verge garden in the right context, you know, we gain more understanding of what it takes to to give us that food on a constant basis.
In your mind, at least, as kind of a landscape architect, how would these urban agricultural kind of public spaces that would have some element of kind of the growing of fresh produce, how would they work? Would it literally be houses with, vines down the side that you could pick a grape off or a like, or would it be similar to a community garden where it's going to be areas for kind of growing and you can pick up a carrot as you need or some herbs and such?
Yeah, great question. I mean, there's, I guess, different types of public spaces we have from, you know, say a public park where, you know, some kind of orchard or community garden plots can work well. Whereas in more urban contexts, you know, we have, I think, greater aesthetic or visual expectations of what, you know, highly urbanized spaces could be. So that's where we probably need a little bit more maintenance or management. You know, we sort of can't tuck a potentially slightly messy community garden bed away in you know, in an urban square or something like that. But, you know, edible spaces can be incredibly beautiful if the sort of spatial and aesthetic aspects of them, you know, are designed and then also then maintained in a way, you know, you need the knowledge and the skills to be able to do that, both in the design and the maintenance. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's people out there with those skills. So it's really what's appropriate for a given context, I think, yeah.
Do you think the aesthetic element would be kind of crucial to the success? Like, it seems, when you first think about it, you think, oh, well, the aesthetics could be sacrificed for sustainability and such. But without looking nice, would appeal then as a result kind of fall away and that would become a kind of mute point or a mute idea?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a really good point, Jared. So, and certainly, again, in you know, say in more heavily densified areas of Sydney where there's a lot of people vested in those spaces, then yeah, definitely the aesthetics are crucial to maintain a sort of expectation of what's appropriate. But at the same time, I think slowly, generationally, we might see a shift to appreciate, like what you're suggesting perhaps, is a different aesthetic, you know, moving away from perhaps, you know, the sort of control and strict geometries. And, you know, even if, again, if we look back to historic photos from the mid 20th century, you know, public spaces were often pretty stark. And, you know, we've moved to a more diversified aesthetic in terms of plants. We've moved to a more indigenous or native appreciation aesthetic. And so I just think that edible aesthetics should become part of, you know, what we think should be part of public spaces. And then, like you're saying, from everything from a more manicured space, but to perhaps accommodating, you know, a messier edible aesthetic that has a fantastic community function in an appropriate area or an appropriate space.
Do you think, just very quickly, how feasible do you think then these kinds of spaces might be, especially, I guess, factoring in maintenance, hot Australian summers, and like we've touched on a couple of times, public interest?
Yeah, no, another great question. So, look, you definitely need, I think, both bottom-up and top-down sort of impetus to make these things work. I mean, the thing is, in cities, you know, and there's a lot about urban cooling and microclimates, but in effect in cities we have excess water we need to deal with. So in Western Sydney, you know, in the sort of South Creek and Hawkesbury Nepean catchment, you know, there is basically too much water as that area becomes more urbanised, and so we do need to absorb that water, and, you know, edible species certainly absorb water. Obviously, there needs to be, you know, standards and controls met in terms of the quality of water used for irrigation. But, yeah, look, it's you know, there's definitely maintenance challenges. Let's not be naive about these things. You know, we do need to take them seriously, but we're certainly up for the task. We've got the skills and the knowledge, and if we want to do these things, we can. I think it's just the will to do them. And then, like you said, I think COVID, you know, where we saw Bunnings, you know, sell out and hardware stores and nurseries sell out of everything that was vaguely edible, you know, and things missing on our shelves that we wanted, I think these types of events will hopefully help shift us towards making the commitment to make these part of our public domain.
Yeah, it would be nice. I suppose you're kind of anyone that's ever kind of, or that has access to a community garden or at least is a bit of a green thumb themselves and they get into a veggie patch in their backyard, no one ever really has a bad word to say about it. So it's a nice idea and hopefully something that might become viable, feasible, and then that we have going forward.
Yeah, definitely. I hope so. You know, yeah, let's get on board with it.
Would be nice. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Josh. I do appreciate your time. Have a good rest of the day and rest of the week.
Pleasure, Jared. Thank you very much.
Cheers. That was Dr. Joshua Zoynet, registered landscape architect and senior lecturer at UNSW, discussing the case for incorporating edible public spaces into our inner city architecture.